We live in a beautiful green world. Plants help to feed us and sustain all the animals that share our planet. From time immemorial, the sight of a fresh green landscape has filled human hearts with joy and wonder. And that's before we even get to flowers and fruit. We crave green space. And if we can't be outdoors, we bring the plants inside to have them near us.
Now, imagine a tale about a great wizard who invented a special powder that could make plants of all kinds grow better. A powder that could make them more resistant to drought and heat, that could make food crops grow faster and bigger, that could make trees grow taller and stronger, that could even make deserts turn green. And the story gets better. Imagine this special powder was so cheap to make that companies would give it away for free. Farmers could use it without having to pay for it. And imagine it was so abundant that people could spread it in forests and grasslands and watch them all become greener and healthier. But now suppose the story takes a dark turn. Imagine that in the midst of all this bounty, some false wizards convinced the king that this powder was the result of sinister witchcraft and that it caused bad weather, disease, and madness. So they joined forces to cover up the good news about its effect on plants, get rid of the powder, and punish anyone who tried to use it. And the few sane people who knew the truth and tried to fight back were mocked, silenced, or banished from the land. The end. It's not a bad setup for a fantasy novel, unless it seems too unrealistic because the villainous turn is too implausible. But the thing is, it's not a fantasy, it's reality. It's a true story, and we're in the middle of it. Only the phase state has been changed to hide that it's a true story, because it's not about a powder, it's about a gas called carbon dioxide, or CO2. And CO2 really is a magic elixir that is leading to global greening, to healthier and more abundant food crops, to taller trees and lush gardens where there used to be deserts. And yes, it's free. It's a byproduct of using fossil fuels. And rising atmospheric CO2 has caused, or at least coincided with, a remarkable increase in plant fertility globally in the last half century. And as we'll show you in this video, there's a massive amount of science confirming the good news. But instead of celebrating, governments who claim to be following the science have now decided that it's not a good thing. Instead, CO2 is carbon pollution, and they're trying to get rid of it, get us to net zero CO2 production by 2050, or even start sucking it out of the atmosphere and killing the plants. They've become convinced that it's the reason we sometimes get bad weather, or get sick, or suffer from any number of problems. But that part is the fantasy. What's true, and what we're about to show you, is that carbon dioxide is a great benefit to the world's plants, and therefore to all the animals, including people, because we depend on those plants. And those whose job it is to tell you about it have kept it hidden because they hated it and didn't want you to know. But I do. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and this is a CDN crystal ball video on carbon dioxide and the great global greening that they didn't see coming even after it happened. Or at least pretended they didn't.
The story begins with the vital biological process called photosynthesis. This is the process by which plants build biomass by converting light and certain molecules in the air into the chemical compounds that make up plant matter. It's absolutely vital to any kind of complex life. Photosynthesis requires carbon dioxide, or CO2, water vapor, or H2O, and light. And these things interact with a molecule inside plant cells called RuBisCO, which is short for ribulose 1,5-bisphosphate carboxylase oxygenase.
RuBisCO. It sounds kind of like a breakfast cereal. You know, start your day with a bowl of crunchy RuBisCO. But it's actually an enzyme that acts catalytically to promote a chemical reaction crucial to plant life.
Photosynthesis happens when a carbon dioxide molecule comes into contact with RuBisCO. In most plants, the carbon is converted to a new molecule with three carbon atoms, which is what plant cells are made of. This is referred to as the C3 process, because one guide explains, of the intermediary 3-carbon organic acid, 3-phosphoglyceric acid, 3PGS, which is then reduced to carbohydrate in the Calvin cycle. Rubisco is believed to have evolved about 3 billion years ago. And for a very long time afterwards, plants relied on C3 photosynthesis to grow. But over the past 200 million years, something changed. The level of CO2 in the air has been steadily declining, especially in the last 65 million years. And we're now in a period of severely low CO2 levels by historical or prehistorical standards. In response, about 35 million years ago, some plants evolved another more efficient photosynthesis process in which CO2 is concentrated inside the leaf and then first converted to an intermediary 4-carbon oxaloacetic acid molecule before going through the C3 process, which is why this one is called the C4 process. And corn, or maize, is an example of a modern crop that grows using the C4 process, as does sugarcane, sorghum, and pearl millet. But just about every other type of plant, from rice to wheat to trees, is C3. And whichever they are, they absolutely need CO2 to live, let alone thrive.
Carbon dioxide really is the magic gas that makes plants happen, the essential nutrient they need to grow. And here's another cool detail. Plants get CO2 from the air by opening pores on their leaf surfaces called stomata. But every time they open their stomata, some water vapor escapes, which is bad. It's a necessary trade-off, but when CO2 is more abundant in the air, they don't have to open their stomata as much, which means they don't lose as much water. So, more CO2 allows them to use water more efficiently, and thus makes them more resilient to dryness, including drought.
The current concentration of CO2 in outdoor air, called the ambient level, is about 420 parts per million, up a little bit from 280 parts per million in the early 1800s, but still far lower than the levels over previous millions of years when plants evolved and flourished.
CO2 is such a magic elixir for plants that commercial greenhouses call it a growth turbo and pump the stuff in. Typically, the government of the Canadian province of Ontario, when it's not busy pumping out propaganda about the threat of carbon pollution, tells greenhouse operators that while the concentration of CO2 in outdoor air is helpful for plants, quote, increasing the CO2 level to 1,000 parts per million will increase the photosynthesis by about 50% over ambient CO2 levels, end quote. As for human beings, including those working in greenhouses, breathing air with 1,000 parts per million of CO2 isn't remotely harmful. In fact, the air inside most buildings and cars gets that high after a few hours because our own outgoing breath contains 40,000 parts per million of CO2, which viewers of the film Apollo 13 will recall is not safe to breathe in for any length of time. In fact, safety standards generally advise against spending hours breathing in 10,000 parts per million. But again, that's a level enormously higher than ambient ones or what you get inside a greenhouse. And the other thing that commercial greenhouses do to help the plants, also relevant to this whole panic over the gentle warming associated with the rise in CO2, is heat the air and the water supply. Because cold, like drought, is deadly for plants. Life inside a greenhouse means warmer air with more water and lots of CO2. And that's heaven if you're a plant, or if you're a person who likes to see plants thriving because you like looking at them, eating them, or both.
So why are so many politicians and activists telling us we have to go to net zero and beyond and eliminate all our CO2 emissions? The problem, they tell us, is that rising carbon dioxide levels can affect our planet's climate system, mainly by causing it to warm slightly and get a bit wetter in many places.
Okay, suppose it's true. What's the problem? Isn't warmer, wetter, and more CO2 good for plants? I understand why we're supposed to reduce real air pollution like smog and sulfur dioxide. At high enough levels, those things demonstrably do make us sick, foul the air, and kill plants. But the stuff they've been calling carbon pollution, that is carbon dioxide, doesn't affect air quality and it benefits plants. So, do you get the feeling we're not being told the whole story? The fact is, the global warming alarm industry has spent decades hyping every possible harm that might arise from a little bit of warming while covering up all the benefits for plants of extra CO2. Anyone who survived high school biology could tell you that if atmospheric CO2 rises, whatever its other consequences, plants will do better. But you won't learn any of these things from the scientific bureaucrats at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Indeed, in a recent series on our own website, we went through all the IPCC summaries for policymakers and couldn't find a single mention of the benefits for plants from rising CO2. Nor is it in their technical summaries or their synthesis reports. If you look at the full assessment reports and you dig far enough past endless pages of doom and gloom and model-generated forecasts of misery and chaos, you can find one dense and confusing hint deep in one of the technical chapters that admits that something positive might be happening, but not in such a way that they were hoping you'd notice it.
In summary, there's high confidence that vegetation greenness, that is green leaf area and or mass, has increased globally since the early 1980s.
Why were they finally forced to admit the world's getting greener? Because truth is the tortoise that often starts slow, but it ultimately wins the race. Despite their best efforts to cover it up, it's happening so much that it's now even visible from space.
In 2016, an international group of scientists led by Zaichun Zhu of Peking University in China published a study using satellite data collected from 1982 to 2009, showing that between 25 and 50% of the Earth's land surface had gotten greener, and that CO2 fertilization effects explain 70% of the observed greening trend. The next year, another team of scientists, also based at Peking University, confirmed that satellite data show unequivocally that the land surface has been greening for the past 30 years, and that leaf area index, LAI, has increased by 8% globally. They also reported that the extra plants were absorbing heat and counteracting some of the observed warming due to greenhouse gases. In 2019, a third group of scientists from Peking University published another study showing that long-term satellite records reveal a significant global greening of vegetated areas since the 1980s, which recent data suggest has continued past 2010. They said China and India showed especially strong greening, but it was happening all over the world, even in the Arctic, and they confirmed CO2 was the main driver. In fact, as yet another study published in 2019 by a team led by Australian scientist Vanessa Havard showed, global plants were responding to the extra CO2 much faster than scientists had expected. In fact, the greening rate measured by satellites was nearly twice as high as current estimates derived from computer models. And in 2024, a team led by Xin Chen of Nanjing University in China published an updated analysis of satellite data that concluded quite simply, global greening is an indisputable fact. And despite expectations that it should be slowing down, the rate of global greening increased slightly.
So, the CO2-driven greening is so strong that it's been visible from space for at least a decade. It's happening twice as fast as models predicted, it's speeding up rather than slowing down, and it's happening even in the Arctic. Anything else the experts failed to mention? Oh yeah.
The extra CO2 isn't just making plants grow faster. It's making them more efficient in their use of water. In 2017, a team of Australian scientists wrote, "Land plants are absorbing 17% more carbon dioxide from the atmosphere now than 30 years ago, our research published today shows. Equally extraordinary, our study shows that the vegetation is hardly using any extra water to do it, suggesting that global change is causing the world's plants to grow in a more water-efficient way." Because plants have rising water use efficiency, greening is especially strong in some of the driest areas of the planet, places where it's hardest to scrape out a living farming. In fact, even though climate models predicted deserts would expand due to global warming, satellite data showed the opposite is happening. A 2024 study concluded, "Future projections show continued increases in aridity due to climate change, suggesting that drylands will expand." In contrast, satellite observations indicate an increase in vegetation productivity.
It's all incredibly good news, at least nearly all. The bad news is that none of it's mentioned in the IPCC summaries, nor in any other government reports on climate change that we're aware of. The same governments and activists who constantly tell us to follow the science and fly around the world nonstop to never-ending conferences where they talk about climate change until they're blue in the face from all the CO2 they're exhaling or blasting out of their airplane engines, haven't seen fit to tell you that rising CO2 is making our world greener and healthier. And when I say healthier, I mean the people and the animals living on it. Because, as noted, the benefits from global greening go beyond just having more pretty plants to look at. World food production is also rising because atmospheric CO2 is rising.
Scientists have spent decades measuring the effect of CO2 on plant growth. Thousands upon thousands of experiments in laboratories and outdoor field settings have reported remarkable benefits to food plants and crops of all kinds from higher CO2 levels. For instance, rice is the world's most important food staple. About 11% of arable land around the world is used to grow it, and it makes up 20% of the daily calories for half the world's population. Scientists have used so-called free air CO2 enrichment, or FACE, experiments to measure how well rice responds in outdoor settings to local increases in the level of carbon dioxide. In a 2021 study that reviewed 160 FACE experiments conducted over 20 years, the authors concluded that elevated CO2 levels had boosted rice growth, on average, by 16%. Furthermore, when researchers looked at hybrid varieties especially suited to the higher CO2 levels, the growth increase was nearly 25%.
And it's not just rice that benefits from extra CO2. Take wheat, for instance. The website co2science.org reports on 92 published experiments between 1983 and 2020 exposing wheat to enriched CO2 levels. Converted to an extra 300 parts per million common scale, the average growth boost was an incredible 67.6%. Which actually isn't even surprising, let alone incredible, when you consider that the evolution of C4 photosynthesis around the beginning of the Oligocene, some 34 million years ago, was an adaptive response to a long-term, sustained drop in atmospheric CO2 from the levels that most plants find comfortable. And back then, it was still around 760 parts per million. Plants need CO2, lots of it. And when they get it, you see dramatic results.
And not just increased growth. They also exhibit increased resilience to heat. A 2016 study by a team of American and European scientists surveyed all available evidence regarding how wheat, maize, rice, and soybean will grow under a combination of climate warming and rising CO2 levels. They concluded that rapid warming would eventually have a negative effect on plant growth, but it would be fully compensated for by the extra CO2 for wheat and soybean, and almost completely for rice and maize. What's more, the plants became far more efficient in their water usage when there's more CO2 in the air.
At this point, we could spend hours telling you about study after study that shows that extra CO2 in the air benefits plants, trees, crops, greenery of all kinds. What fun we'd have. And I do want to give a shout out to co2science.org here for its incredible work over the years archiving vast amounts of experimental evidence about the benefits of CO2 on plant growth, which, frankly, is precisely the work the IPCC was meant to be doing. But at a certain point, you might start thinking it was redundant. Everybody knows CO2 is good for plants, don't they? Well, just in case, we'll tell you about one remarkable study that looks at agricultural productivity in the United States.
A 2021 report from the U.S. National Bureau of Economic Research by economists Charles Taylor and Wolfram Schlenker used satellite-measured observations of outdoor CO2 levels across the United States, matched to agricultural output data and other economic variables. After controlling for the effects of weather, local pollution, and trends in technology, the authors concluded that every 10 parts per million increase in CO2 levels boosted corn yields by 5%, soybeans by 6%, and wheat by 8%. These are much larger gains than had previously been estimated using FACE experiments. Altogether, the authors concluded that since 1940, CO2 emissions had boosted U.S. crop production by an incredible 50 to 80%.
So, can we please stop calling it carbon pollution? The fact is that carbon dioxide is a miracle gas that's greening the planet, boosting food supplies, and making plants more resilient to drought. Now, someone might object that it's also causing warming, And they might say, if you look at both sides and weigh the good and the bad, we might still decide that it's harmful. But the problem is, we haven't been shown both sides. We've only been shown one side, and an exaggerated, cartoonish, alarmist version of it at that. There's now plenty of evidence that CO2 isn't having the warming effect alarmists warned about 20 years ago, not that a bit of warming would necessarily even be a bad thing. But climate models predicted far too much, and they predicted scary trends in extreme weather that also failed to turn up. And meanwhile, groups like the IPCC and government environment ministries completely covered up the great global greening miracle. And if they change tactics and decide that since they can't hide it anymore, they'll start talking about it, you can bet they'll bend over backwards to find a downside and try to convince you that it's a bad thing. You know, we keep hearing complaints in some quarters about how the general public has stopped trusting our established institutions, including the scientific ones. And if you're wondering why, well, here's a case where a lot of lavishly funded science agencies spent years hiding the mounting evidence about global greening and the benefits of CO2 emissions because it didn't fit their political master's narrative about a climate crisis. So why should we trust them? Instead, let's trust the data, trust the evidence, and trust the plants themselves, who are telling us loud and clear that they want more CO2. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and that's our CDN crystal ball look into CO2, the great global greening, and the dark wizards who tried to cover it up.
That's right.